Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. I want to talk to you about the Bose S1, which is an amazing speaker for acoustic guitar gigs that I recently got to test drive. The S1 has two separate channels. It's got one for guitar and one for microphone, and there's a third channel you can use for a looper or for backing tracks that you can access by Bluetooth or through a 1/8 inch input. And the S1 is actually portable and rechargeable for up to 11 hours. So the guitar and mic channels, they have separate independent tone, volume, and reverb controls, and they also have something called a proprietary tone match switch, which EQs, optimizes, and restores the natural sound of your acoustic guitar, which, as you know, is typically your biggest problem when you're playing acoustic amps. I tested the S1 speaker, and it's very responsive to pickups, and the tone, volume, and reverb controls genuinely work great. You can position the S1 four different ways. You can tilt it back to broadcast out to an audience, or you can put it horizontally, vertically, or on a stand. The S1 also has a proprietary Bose accelerometer, which automatically adjusts the EQ and optimizes the sound based on whichever one of these four positions you're using. So effectively, you have an acoustic guitar amp, a PA, and a killer Bluetooth speaker all in one. So the bottom line is, if you're an acoustic player, there's absolutely nothing out there that sounds this good and this big, that's portable and battery powered. And the S1 also happens to be the best Bluetooth speaker Bose makes, which says a lot. I used it myself for a party we had here one night, and it was absolutely amazing. All my kids were freaking out. It's like having a full stereo system out on your patio. You can easily use this for DJing, tailgating, or whatever you want. Before this, you'd have to spend thousands of dollars on a bunch of equipment to get the same thing the S1 does. On top of that, it's sleek and it looks great, just like all Bose devices do. And besides whatever money back guarantee you get from wherever you buy the S1, Bose also warranties the S1 for 2 years from any kind of defects in materials or performance. For more information and to find out where to get your own S1, I'd like you to go to pro.bose.com/podcast. Check it out at pro.bose.com/podcast and get the S1. It's outstanding. This is an important announcement for anyone thinking about advertising here on Everyone Loves Guitar. We've experienced incredible growth. We currently have over 82,000 monthly listens, and I would anticipate cracking six figures in the next few months. We've also grown our YouTube subscriber base by 72 times. During this time, we've kept our advertising rates consistent, but I wanted to let you know we'll be increasing these rates after the first of the new year. So if you're a business looking to generate new leads or increase your cash flow by adding new clients or customers, or if you're looking for general brand exposure, or if you're a label looking to promote new music and you want to lock into the current advertising rates before they go up at the end of this year, then listen closely. Fill in the short form at everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Even if you want to advertise next year, contact us now and you'll get to lock into the current rates before they go up at the end of this year. Thanks for listening. See you soon.
If you want to buy or sell a home or investment property and you're here in the Tampa Bay area in Hillsboro, Pinellas, or Pasco counties, then listen up. West Florida Real Estate is a local residential real estate broker that's helped over 250 Bay Area homeowners buy and sell their properties in the last 4 years alone. If you're looking to sell, you'll want to get their free report, The 7 Biggest Mistakes Homeowners Make When Hiring a Realtor. And if you're looking to buy a property, you definitely want to get your hands on The 21 Most Expensive Mistakes Tampa Home Buyers Make When Buying a Home. Each one of these reports is going to save you time and money. Inside, you'll discover the 7 most important things to consider when hiring a realtor, what to do if you're buying and selling a home at the same time, and the danger of choosing a realtor who agrees with everything you say. To get your hands on these free reports, head on over to westfloridarealestate.com. That's westfloridarealestate.com.
Hey, this is Craig. If you like this show and you want to support it and you want to keep it free, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/support. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. I've got one of my favorite blues guitarists here today. Great writer, great player, great sound. He's a triple threat, and he's a really cool guy. Craig Ross plays with Lenny Kravitz, has been playing with him for a while, and he also co-writes a lot of the hits. Quick announcement. I just want to – two things. Number one, I want to thank Yogi Lonich for hooking us up. And second, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe, and that's where you could subscribe to the audio and the YouTube channel as well. All right, let's talk about Craig Ross. At 15, Craig was playing the L.A. clubs, and he eventually formed the band The Broken Homes. While in high school, they opened up for Stevie Ray Vaughan, INXS, and Jerry Lee Lewis, amongst others, while doing club gigs with bands such as Guns N' Roses and Jane's Addiction. Quick question, man. How the hell did you manage to open up for Stevie Ray Vaughan in high school?
Well, we got signed, you know, to MCA Records, and we got an agent, a touring agent, and we ended up with Stevie Ray Vaughan's agent, Alex Hodges. Yeah. That's it was heavy.
Did like your mom have to take you to the, you know, because you weren't of age?
No, well, you know, honestly, I don't think it was high school. I must have been 18 by then.
Right out, yeah.
18 or 19, yeah. And no, we were on tour, man. It was like, you know, we were in a van and we drove all the way across the country. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's really awesome. The band made three records for MCA Records in the 80s, working with producers such as Andy Johns of Led Zeppelin and Rolling Stones fame, and this seminal period gave Craig his education in studio and touring. He's been touring and recording with Lenny Kravitz since 1991's Mama Said. He's written and played on every subsequent Lenny album since then, as well as records by Sheryl Crow, Mick Jagger, B.B. King, Eric Clapton, The Black Crowes, Nika Costa, guitarist Mark Ford's first solo album, It's About Time, and others. He joined Lenny in the studio, co-writing and playing all the guitars on the track Are You Gonna Go My Way, Spinning Around Over You, Is There Any Love in Your Heart, Where Are We Running, Stillness of Heart, Lady, and other Lenny Kravitz hits. And Craig and Lenny performed at the 2012 Kennedy Center Honors Tribute to Led Zeppelin, where they played Whole Lot of Love. And I would seriously encourage everybody listening to go on YouTube and check that performance out, which, as I came to learn from Craig, there's a short version on there, but they didn't show the whole thing. So my question about this is, I say that because my question is wrong. But first of all, thank you very much for coming on the show. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, of course.
I had a question. I think I had asked this to you a while back about the Kennedy Center performance. A couple of questions, actually. What were you playing on there? It looked just like a vintage Black Les Paul with P90s. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it's a 55 custom. So it's got the P90s and that Alnico pickup in it.
You're primarily a Gibson guy?
No, I like Fenders too.
Oh, you do?
Fenders, Martins, yeah.
Your guitars are great. All the guitars I've seen you playing on YouTube, man. I originally thought that you didn't play Jimmy Page's like solo from...
Right.
Yeah.
Because they have that edited version that they use for TV.
Right, but I actually thought that was cool because I'm like, man, I think this guy's got balls because everybody's going to go play. But you did your own thing, and it sounded perfect. I mean, you know, it fit what you were doing.
Thanks.
Was there any, like, thought processes just about that whole performance or, like, what to do, what not to do?
I mean, I was just trying to not mess up. I mean, Jimmy Page, he's, like, my favorite guitar player. He was there. Jeff Beck was in the audience. Buddy Guy. It was kind of intense.
Did you get to play with any of those guys?
No, not at that thing. No.
Yeah, that is pretty intense, but you sounded great, man. And I'm sure they thought they're fans of good guitar playing also. I'm sure they felt the same way everybody else did, you know?
It was awesome. It was, you know, the best thing we could have done.
Very cool, you know? Man.
Yeah.
Your influences, I read, include Freddie and Albert King and Hendrix and Page, as you just said. Mm-hmm. What about the blues turned you on so much as a kid? Because to me, you're like you're a great blues rock player in the old sense of people like Paul Kossoff. I mean, your tone, just everything is just so geared towards doing blues.
Well, I don't know. When I first started listening to music, I was listening to early rock and roll, like Chuck Berry, a lot of that kind of stuff. And that evolved into the Beatles and from there, you know, it just, I started listening to a lot of English 60s music. And I really liked the guitar playing on a lot of that English, like blues rock stuff. And then, you know, eventually you learn that they got it from somebody. And that's when I went back and found Freddie King and T-Bone Walker and B.B. King and all that stuff. But it's that sound of that British sound of those guys when they discovered Les Paul, and that I love so much, you know, Peter Green and Clapton and Keith and, you know, that whole era. Just stuff.
I often find that blues players are playing blues. It's very cathartic in many ways. Is there anything in particular like, that you're working off? Like, you know, did you have like a tough childhood or something like that, that playing blues is your way of sort of, letting that run out?
Well, I've never analyzed it, but you know, when you are playing live, you know, you usually go into some kind of a zone and you're expressing something, obviously. You know, I don't know exactly where it comes from, but I'm sure, you know, there's truth to, you know, whatever comes in goes out.
Yeah.
But nothing specifically traumatic or anything like that. No. Yeah.
Thank you. What was your first big break, and how did you get started in the business?
Well, you know, like you said earlier, you know, I had bands through high school, and we would play from Los Angeles. So we would play the clubs in Los Angeles. We played the places like the Troubadour and Roxy and things like that. And eventually we got a lineup together that was pretty solid, and we started writing our own songs. And back in the 80s, college radio was a big thing. So to make a long story short, we did a little demo and ended up at this college radio station in Northridge that this guy, Michael Goldstone, who was working at MCA at the time, he used to listen to this station, I guess. And he heard us and contacted us, and we ended up signing a record deal.
Straightforward like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really cool. You've played with a lot of people. I'm going to mention some of their names. If you could talk about how you initially got the gig and a cool or interesting story about working with them. Let's start with Lenny, I guess.
Lenny, I met shooting pool in Hollywood back in 91. I used to, my roommates in the house I was living in at the time were Kathy Valentine. She's the bass player in the Go-Go's.
Sure.
And Clem Burke, who's the drummer from Blondie. And I used to go shoot pool with Kathy quite a bit because we were both, you know, in kind of in between gigs, not doing so much. And Kathy knew Lenny from the days of the Go-Go's recording at A&M Studios in LA. Lenny used to hang out there trying to get into sessions and learn and that kind of thing. And she remembered him as the kid who used to hang around the studio. Anyways, 91, we're shooting pool and Lenny's there and Kathy goes to say hi. And it turns out that he's looking for a guitar player. And Kathy says, well, I know who that is. He's over here. And that's when, you know, I met Lenny and I joined the band the next day.
It was that simple.
That was it.
No audition. No. That's amazing, man.
I mean, I went to his house after the shooting pool and played a little bit, and he called me the next morning. And
that
said,
is so,
you know,
cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Because the length of time you guys have been together is phenomenal. I mean, congratulations.
Well, it's almost 30 years now. Yeah.
Congratulations to both of you to have it, just to have any, you know, look, man, any relationship.
Of course.
Work out that long is like, takes a lot of work on both parties, a lot of commitment, you know?
Yeah. He's like a brother to me now. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Clapton,
I only played with him once, and And you're referring, I think, to this record that he did with B.B. King. And that's where B.B. King comes in as well. So I have a friend named Doyle Bramhall, second, who's a phenomenal guitar player.
I know him. I know who he is, man. We saw him in concert a couple of years back. He's tremendous, man.
He's phenomenal. So anyways, he asked me to play. He asked me to write with him. And we wrote a couple songs together that ended up on one of his records. Clapton heard his record, and beyond the fact that he just loved Doyle, he also liked a couple songs on the record that he decided he wanted to use for a record that he was making with B.B. King. So what ended up happening is they covered one of Doyle's songs. Doyle plays on the record, and Clapton's playing, I guess, my part.
That's really cool.
What would have been my part, yeah. But seeing as, you know, both Clapton and B.B. King are two of my absolute favorites, it's, you know, it's just an honor to...
Yeah, to get your song.
To have my song, and Eric Clapton's actually playing my guitar part for a change. You know, it's usually I'm trying to play his stuff, so...
That's really cool, man. It must have felt great.
Are you kidding? Yeah. It was beyond. Yeah. Beyond. Yeah.
Sheryl Crow.
I don't remember where I met her, but we used to see her around a lot because we were doing a lot of the same TV shows, things like that back in the 90s. And she asked me to come play on her record. I think it was Come On, Come On was the name. I'm not sure if that's the name of the record. Anyway, so I played on a few songs with her on that record. And I played with her live once or twice.
She's had I've had probably seven or eight guys on the show that she's had. She goes to a lot of guitar players.
And all great guitar players.
All of them. Every one of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just played on a session. I mean, I never joined her band or anything like that. No.
Yeah. I would imagine it's like all in the same circle too, because most of these guys know each other. Like Jason.
Yeah.
Jason Orme.
I know Peter Stroud.
Yeah.
And all that group. Yeah. I mean, and Audley.
Yeah.
You know, and I've toured with Audley when he was in the Crows. And we've known each other for years.
Yeah. Craig, what would you say the top three experiences you've had musically? Just a knee-jerk reaction.
Well, that Zeppelin thing was one of them. You know, I mean, I got to play in front of my heroes, and that was a heavy night. There's one funny thing. One year Lenny and I were going to play with Aretha Franklin on this Rolling Stone anniversary concert, something like that. It was at the Garden. Anyways, we were going to do one song, and it was the rehearsal the day before was at SIR in New York, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's a big room, but she's got a huge band. Anyways, Lenny's guitar tech wanted to show me the rig he set up for me and blah, blah, blah. But the thing was, they set me up in the very back corner of this stage. And so as I was looking at my guitar, her band came in, and her band, must've been 20 people in that band. And they all came and they took their places and cornered me in the back. I couldn't move. And like I said, I was only going to play one song. I was going to come in with Lenny later on. So here I am stuck on the stage, and Aretha walks in and they start rehearsing their set. And I'm stood up there next to her guitar player. And anyways, to make a long story short, because I'm such a huge fan and I know this stuff anyways, I just started playing with them. So I ended up doing a whole rehearsal.
That's cool,
with
man.
Aretha Franklin. And in the middle of the rehearsal, the MD came with their songbook and gave it to me. I guess they just assumed I was in the band at that point. And anyways, it's a funny story, but it was awesome. I got to do a set with Aretha Franklin.
Did you wind
nobody
up
really saw
play? Oh, so you didn't do the set at the show?
They invited me to do the set, but you know, I just didn't think that was really my place. I was there, you know, with Lenny, and I just did what I was supposed to do and then split.
That was really cool of you.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I probably should have done it, but whatever. What are you gonna do?
Yeah. No, but I could see that was like respectful. That was really respectful.
I mean, they were all wearing their band outfits, their matching and everything, and I definitely was not wearing their gear.
And jeans and t-shirt didn't match what they were wearing.
The funny thing, though, was is they put me on stage right ahead of Lenny at the Garden, and they put me on a little bit early, and while they were doing that, Aretha started introducing her band. And you know, it's a sold out Garden, and she starts on one side of the stage and she's working her way over. And I was just thinking, you know, there's 20 people here. There's no way she's going to remember everybody's name and introduce everybody. Anyways, she's introducing, they're coming closer. And you know, I figure, well, I'm just going to go play with my amp or something until they're done with this. And the guitar player pats me on the shoulder and says, "Hey man, she's talking to you." And you know, I pick up my head, and she's, sure enough, Aretha Franklin's going, "What's your name?" Because she's introducing me. She saw me rehearse the day before. She might have thought I was playing the whole night anyway. So
that's funny, man.
I got introduced by Aretha Franklin at the Garden, which is also great.
First show you didn't do.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah, that is really funny, man. That's very cool. And what would be number three?
I guess was opening for Stevie Ray Vaughan, because at the time he was, you know, he was the greatest living, rock guitar player at that time. And I was a huge fan. And just even the buildup, knowing that I was going to be playing on the same bill as him, kind of at the time elevated my, I guess it elevated my playing because of the pressure of that and that I put on myself. I thought, well, you know, I'm really going to have to step up. And that was, you know, one of the things that kind of really pushed me to take it maybe another step and really get serious about, you know, replaying and that kind of thing. So that's a big moment because it was, you know, for my education, I think it was a big step.
Did you get to talk with him or hang with him at all?
I was so intimidated by him that, you know, I was quite shy around him. But, you know, we hung out a little bit. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Are you in general, you tend to be shy? Are you outgoing or?
Yeah, I'm not that outgoing, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up originally?
In LA, in the San Fernando Valley.
In the Valley. What was your childhood like growing up?
It was fine, you know, working parents, that kind of thing. So I had a lot of time to myself, I guess, during the day. Right. And just mostly just playing guitar, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because a lot of guitar players tend to be shy and more reserved. And if you think about it, it kind of goes with, like, you know, a real outgoing person is going to have more of a struggle to sit in his room and play guitar 10 hours a day.
Makes sense. Never thought about it.
Yeah. I've met a lot of guys that are more on the shy side. And even when they go on stage, if they're told that they often have a different demeanor on stage, but it's almost like, and I don't know, maybe what you're like, but it's almost like a different person comes on stage for that.
I've heard people say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
About me, yeah.
Oh, so
yeah, it makes sense.
You're a different guy too on stage.
Well, I mean,
I don't mean like don't consciously, so. Like consciously, like, oh, I'm going to be different out there. No, but I mean,
I guess people are surprised that I'm whatever confident or whatever when I'm that, you know, they just see a different side of me, I guess.
You know, it's interesting when I watched a lot of videos of you playing and in preparing for the interview, one of the things that came across was you're confident. And when you see someone that's confident, it's almost like, and you're listening to them play music, it's almost like when you go to a doctor that's got good bedside manner. It, as a listener, it's just, yeah, like I feel I'm in good hands.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, you did this one thing at like Norm's Rare Guitars, and I was fucking blown away. I was like, holy shit. I have it still because it's something I want to work on. It was just like, it was so perfect, man. It was just like, and I'm not like a fanboy, but it is what it is, man. It was just beautiful playing. Yeah. You know,
thank you.
You were very confident, like that, not arrogant, but confident. And it's really nice as a listener to feel like, oh, I'm in good hands with this guy, just like with,
oh, that's awesome.
With a doctor, yeah. You know. So, do you have any other side hustles going outside of playing for a living? Like a lot of guys nowadays have plan B, plan C, or different stuff there.
No, I've been doing this for so long. It's pretty much it. And, I mean, I'm busy most of the year. So if I'm not doing that stuff, I'm just, you know, catching up with my family and things like that. No, I don't really have time.
Good for you, man. I'm glad you're so busy.
Yeah.
Any surprises when you first started about the business end of the business of being a musician?
Well, I learned early how difficult it was to be in a band. And that, you know, that was a frustrating experience for me, which is probably why I was so comfortable just, you know, joining somebody else's thing. And it's, you know, that part was difficult, trying to be in a democratic situation with, you know, a bunch of personalities, and that, it didn't really work out so well. So that's the only thing I learned about the business, other than, you know, the same stuff that everybody else
sure
deals with, you know.
I had an interview a few weeks back and someone said something simple, but it was pretty profound. He said, you know, bands only fight and break up when they're successful.
Well, that's not true.
Oh, no.
we weren't successful.
Signed. You got signed.
Yeah, we got.
And you were touring. You opened up for Stevie Ray Vaughan. By all, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We weren't successful, but you know, I mean, people came along, same time and place. You know, a lot of bands became extremely successful at that time. We just didn't quite make it over the line there. But
sure.
I mean, you know, the truth about bands is there's never going to be a true democracy. There's always going to be one or two guys that are basically going to be in charge, yeah. You know? So anyways, the problem with being, I guess, in a band is everybody thinks that they've got the same amount of say, and that's rarely the case.
Yeah. You don't get your 25% vote.
Not really. I mean, or that people do, but it's still, you know, still like this, whatever.
Yeah. No, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So this is a tough question for you being on the shy side. What were some of the low points or darker periods that you've had to go through, and how'd you get through them?
Well, you know, I guess it's just, you know, being on the road as much as we've been on the road, family thing becomes an issue. So, you know, there was a few years back with, you know, going through divorce and stuff like that, which was, I would consider the low side of things. Yeah. But, you know, but that's also another typical road musicians, part of their story, I guess, you know.
Well, everybody, man, you don't have to be a musician to get through that, but yeah.
Sure. Well, of course. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's really difficult to be away from home that much. And, you know, usually things don't work out after a while.
No, for sure. Man, you're lucky if they work out when you are home.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And if you're not there to put that work in, it's really tough for sure, man.
Yeah.
Let's talk about gear for a few minutes. What's your number one guitar, the one you like playing the best? And what other two would round out your top three?
Well, there's that 55 Les Paul, which I've had for ages, and I love playing that. I've got a 55 Telecaster that to me is completely magic. And and I just, when we were in Nashville, I just bought, or Lenny actually gave me a 62-345, which is
beyond
magic.
That's what Freddie King played.
Yeah, and it looks like it's been, I don't know, through a probably was in Nashville. It might have been through the flood, but it looks like it's been through everything. But it's just a magic guitar.
Wow, that is so cool. I think you were playing a semi-hollow body or a hollow body in that video at Norm's, if I remember.
Yeah, he was trying to sell, well, I guess he sold it after that, but he was trying to sell us, can't remember what year that one was, but.
It was a semi-hollow.
Early 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was a beautiful guitar. Norm's got the best guitars. Yeah.
Sounded great, man. Any cool or interesting stories, Craig, how you found any of your guitars or came across any of your guitars?
Not really, but there's an interesting story about the Black Les Paul was for many years I put it up in storage because, you know, it's worth, I guess, quite a lot of money. It's a 55 Les Paul. And I put a lot of my more valuable guitars up in storage and didn't want to necessarily take them out on the road. And when Hurricane Sandy blew through New York, I was in Europe watching television, and they showed a picture of New Jersey from the air, and it was underwater, Hoboken. And I realized that's where
your storage was.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So anyway, so I call our, you know, the tech that takes care of everything. And I said, well, what's up with this? He says, yeah, well, it's 9, 10, 12 feet of water. And anyways, so I lost half my gear. I lost half my stuff. I had a Marshall 50 watt Plexi that I've had since I was 13. I've played it since I was 13 all the way up to then. Everything got destroyed except for this Les Paul, which was in one of those 70s plastic cases that I guess they close up pretty tight. And this guitar floated to the ceiling. And when the water receded, it came down, and it was, aside from a couple of things, it was in perfect shape. And then, you know, of course I realized, why am I storing anything? And so it's this miraculous guitar that survived.
That's
that
so
thing.
Cool.
So I play. So not only do I play that now, I play also all my other ones.
All your vintage guitars. Too. Yeah, I think that's good, man.
Yeah.
And you get enjoyment out of it.
Immense, you know, otherwise, you know, sometimes you even forget what you have.
It's yeah.
Parked somewhere. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. It's really random that that one guitar like floated to the top of.
I mean, it would have been the one that really would have broke my heart if it was, you know. And so anyways, yeah.
That's great, man. Good story. Who are some of the players that you've enjoyed jamming with or playing with the best?
Well, you know, growing up, I used to, I used to play a lot with Mark Ford, who was in the Black Crowes for a while. We used to play all the time. We did a jam with Stevie Wonder once. It was pretty incredible because he's just so beyond. Yeah. And there was a really good long jam with Prince once at Paisley Park. And I would say, yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah.
What's the best amp and best guitar you've ever played?
The best amp got destroyed in that flood. It was that one, of course. But it was an old AC-30 from maybe 63, copper top. It was like the best version of that amp I've ever heard. It was just amazing and creamy and. Anyways, perfect. And that and this 55 Telecaster and those two things together were beyond.
Well, I'm meeting more and more guys that play what you'd think traditional Tele music that love playing Teles. It's really wild.
It's the best guitar ever made, the Telecaster.
Tell me
to
why.
Me. I mean, I play a lot of Les Paul, of course, but because a Telecaster, you really... It's really what you put into it is what you get out of it. It's not an easy guitar to play like a Les Paul might be. And, you know, to get tone and all that out of a telly, you think you got to put a little effort into it. So it fights you back a little bit. And I like that.
Yeah, I've met a lot of guys that like playing guitars that fight. What is some of the things that you have found most helpful to get your good tone with a telly?
It depends on the telly, because some of them just sound like, some of them can be pretty brash and,
for sure.
So, you know, just trying to find a good one, a nice light one, and, you know, that breathes a little bit, and that's about it. I think it's a lot about which particular telly it is too.
Sure.
Yeah.
What first record you ever purchased on your own?
That I ever bought, probably would be the White Album, I guess, or maybe a Buddy Holly record. I don't know, but at that time it would have been like probably the White Album.
You played with Mick Jagger also, correct?
Yeah, we recorded with him once, and he's been on stage with Lenny before, and I think we did a television show with him as well.
Oh, very cool. Everybody I've met who's played with him is always so amazed at how, you know, he really is that guy that's strutting all over the place. Like, his energy level, everybody says, is so off the charts.
It's amazing. And just also how, like, just good he is, is really evident when you're up close to him. It's pretty, yeah. Well, I mean, I watched him do this vocal for this track that we cut, and I was just like transported to like some Stone show somewhere. It was insane. It was like one take and he was just on. It was just unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
Top Desert Island Discs, top three, just for now. I know that could change.
Just for now, XL on Main Street. Maybe the Blues Breakers record with Clapton. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Sergeant Pepper.
Are you influenced by Alvin Lee?
No, not really. I mean, the only thing, I mean, I grew up watching the Woodstock movie. I mean, a lot of my learning came from watching movies like that, or The Last Waltz, or, you know, and I used to know that kind of stuff note for note, but that's it as far as Alvin Lee. Really.
Interesting. Because your sense of blues is very genuine. And, you know, there's certain, like, a lot of people play blues, but, you know, a guy like Alvin Lee, Peter Green, yourself, there's a genuine sense of your mastery of how to communicate that. And those
are,
it's really, really good.
Well, he's a lot like his playing, at least what I've seen of it live, seems like it's a lot like Page's was back then too. And, you know,
yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Page is a huge influence on me, so maybe that would be the correlation, I guess. I don't know.
I always find it weird when people say, like, I hate to hear people say, oh, Jimmy Page is sloppy. I'm like, I don't even understand that.
I understand it, because, you know, there's things that you hear him play that you would think he would have maybe fixed, I guess. But no, that dude's a monster.
Oh my God, I know. In the context of, like, playing, you know, 200 shows a year, and, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And he was improvising. So
yeah.
It's
just like, you know, it's just crazy. The questions get tough now, man. Best decision you ever made?
I was going to shoot pool that day.
That is great. That's great. Greg, that's awesome. Yeah, it's funny when you have, like, there's not too many. If you're lucky, you'll have one even, but there's not too many. That's a pivotal moment that changed your whole life.
Yeah, it did. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I met, you know, I met the kid's mother on the road and all that. None of this stuff would have happened in that way.
Yeah.
Nothing would have. It's just whatever. It's like
a life changing.
It's like a Jimmy Stewart moment or something.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It really is. It's so cool to have something like that. That's nice, man.
Yeah.
Similar question along the same lines. most important things that you've learned about yourself?
About myself? Well, as far as my playing goes, I've realized that I really am comfortable playing the stuff I play and just try to make that. You know, a lot of people are trying to maybe go over here or go over there. And I just have realized over the years that I'm kind of comfortable with the kind of stuff I play because it's the stuff I like. And just to be more comfortable, I guess, about who I am and what I do.
That's great. Yeah, it's so cool.
That makes any sense.
Yeah, it's cool that you know, a lot of times people are like, well, I don't do this so well, so I'm working on that. And I'm like, why?
I mean, yeah, I work on other things, but I just realize I'm not going to be, a flamenco guitar player.
Yeah,
it's just not going to happen in this lifetime.
Buck Owens.
Yeah.
This is a tough question, man. It's very tough for you. And if you don't want to answer, that's totally cool. What do you like most about yourself?
About myself? I don't know. I don't know,
your
man.
Your expression. Your expression was priceless on that. You want to give it a shot?
No. I mean, no.
Something about yourself people would be surprised to hear or might find strange.
I don't really know. I haven't really given myself that much thought to be able to. I think I'm pretty, what you see is what you get.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Yeah.
Happiest time in your life?
It's usually when I'm on the road, to be honest.
That's great.
I love being able to, play live. So that to me is the best. It could have been last year. It could have been 20 years ago. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Who's been the biggest influence on you musically? I mean, talk about people you know, musically and also personally.
Well, Lenny is a huge influence, both, I guess, because, you know, we spent so much time together.
Sure.
And his standards are so high. I've learned a lot from him as far as, you know, really executing. When you do something, you do it all the way. You do it right anyways. Yeah. So, yeah, he's been a huge influence.
So let me ask you a question about that. You obviously have a great work ethic because you don't play too many, you don't play any wrong notes, or if you do, they're very, for the number of notes you're playing over a lifetime, mm-hmm. they're not too many. So mm-hmm. that means you got to be pretty demanding on yourself as well.
Right.
Where did that come from?
I don't know if I've always had that because it's, I learned by playing with records, and records are usually, the notes are pretty well put together if you're going to put them out on a record, So that's how I learned how to play. So maybe it comes from that.
But you have to choose to, your standard is, I'm not playing 98%. I'm playing this 100% correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's a decision you had to make. Where did that come from?
I'm not really sure. Maybe it comes from, in my early days when I did record, especially back in those days, you're playing live with a group and you're playing with a tape machine and you can't really fix stuff like you can now. And I don't know. I always seem to be able to, to do stuff without messing up too bad, I guess.
No, man, you don't mess up at all. You have any non-musical superpowers, Craig?
Non-musical superpowers?
Yeah, man.
Besides
shooting pool.
I can cook.
And that's the number one hobby of musicians.
Is it?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Most probably, they're probably very similar things.
Yeah, I think so. A little of this, a little of that.
Yeah, and you're trying to, impress somebody with something you're doing.
Yeah. Besides cooking, any other hobbies or interests outside of music?
No, not really. I mean, I like, it's pretty much all music. It's, I like recording a lot too. I engineer now and
you do
I'm into that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
So I'm, and that's relatively new for me. So that's has that excitement of discovery and all that stuff. But it's everything is based around music, pretty much.
How'd you get into engineering?
Just because Lenny's got a studio in the Bahamas, and I live there a large part of the year, and it's usually just the two of us there. And I guess just by default, I started messing around in the studio, and the engineer that we had for quite a few years, he got quite ill and he couldn't come and do it anymore. And so I just kind of stepped up and started doing it myself.
That's cool, man. What do you like most about that?
Well, the thing I like most about it is I spent most of my life in studios in these magical rooms with, you know, all these magical dials and things. And I didn't always quite pay attention to what the engineer was doing. You know, like if I could transport myself back to when, you know, I was working with Andy Johns, I would have been a little more, he's, you know, he's using this gear and this gear. Anyway, so it's just discovering all that stuff now after, you know, I know what these things sound like. I know what they have, what they used to do, but I never really, you know, sat at the behind the wheel myself. And so to me, it's really creative.
Yeah, that's cool.
In another way. Yeah,
yeah, that's great. Yeah. You've been all over the world, man. What's your favorite place or places that you've traveled?
I quite like Spain.
I hear that often, man. What do you like about that?
Yeah. Well, my wife is Spanish, and which is one thing. And it's the people, the food, the music. It's just a really inspired place.
Very cool. It's funny. My wife's from England. I'm always like, oh, I love England.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel you on exactly. that one, man.
Yeah.
Just a few more questions, man. Talk about a specific experience besides that pool shooting day that changed your life or changed the way you think about things.
That's a tough one. I don't know, really know if I really do have an answer for that, to be honest.
Oh, fair enough, man.
Yeah.
And the rest of these are tough, man. Toughest decision you've ever had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do.
The most difficult thing is leaving home. That's the thing. And I have to do it quite a bit. So it's a reoccurring experience, but you know, that's always tough. It's tough not being somewhere where you know, part of you saying, you know, I really should be there, but you can't. So
it's interesting. Coming out of the business world, there's many differences, obviously, between dealing with business people and dealing with musicians. Mm-hmm. One of them is you never hear business people, not never, that's a big exaggeration, but by and large, you do not hear business people talking about their marriages or how happy they are. And I've talked to so many musicians who are really happily married. And, you know, one of the key things is, hey, man, if you could find someone that understands what you do for a living and supports that and is understands you're not going out to bang a bunch of chicks, but that's your job, you know, it's really nice, you know.
It's super important. And, you know, you could always understand somebody's, you know, being at home and having kids and running a house is difficult work.
Hell yeah. It's the hardest job ever.
Yeah. So if you're not there from a lot of that, you know, you kind of understand that people can get a little frustrated.
Oh, totally, man.
Yeah.
Two more questions, Craig. Best advice you've ever been given and who gave it to you?
I don't know. I took a couple of guitar lessons once from this guy named Jimmy Weibel.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I know. So many people have taken lessons from Jimmy Weibel.
Okay, so this is a stupid story because I really didn't want to take lessons. I just didn't. It's a big regret of my life that I didn't continue to take lessons from him, especially. But at the time, I wasn't ready for lessons. I just wanted to do my own thing. And the very first lesson, he put, you know, I had my guitar and he said, tune your guitar and I'll be right back. And he walked out of the room and then tuned my guitar by ear. Came back. This is stupid, but he comes back and says, my guitar in tune? And he said, yeah. So that was it. That's the advice I got from him. I know how to tune my guitar and the rest I can do myself. Stupid.
That's funny. Yeah, I know. Yeah. A lot of people. Do you know a guy named Smokey Hormel?
Mm-hmm.
Smokey took lessons
from him. He took from him?
Yeah.
Lukather did. Yeah. I know Steve Lukather did. Yeah. Yeah.
Luca, and do you know Cheryl? She lives up in the Bronx now. God, I'm having a brain fart. Blonde haired lady.
I don't know.
Cheryl Bailey took lessons from Jimmy Wyville. Yeah, I've talked to probably a dozen people, man. They all talk very fondly of him.
He was the best. And I called him back years later because I was like, why didn't I take lessons? And of course, he had retired by then. So I lost my shot. But that was him. He was cool.
Yeah, him and Ted Green are the two names that I hear most often with, you know, nostalgic reverence.
Yeah.
And then last question, man, and thank you because I know you're shy and these questions are tough for guys that are shy. So I really appreciate you answering them and your time. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years and how much of that change has been intentional and how much is just a natural part of aging?
Maybe I'm a little more outgoing than I used to be, perhaps. And that's, I think that's age. You know, everything seems to get a little more comfortable feeling when you, as you get older.
Yeah, more comfortable in your skin, for sure, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the number one thing people say as they get older? More comfortable with themselves. Give less fucks.
Yeah, exactly.
About what other people
think. Yeah, if there's going to be something good about it, that's it.
Right on, man. Hey, let me just tell people, you'll be out with Lenny again. There's a spring tour coming up through Australia and Europe. Hopefully towards the end of the year, it'll be here in the States. Or not hopefully, it'll be in the States end of the year.
Hopefully, North America,
Awesome. Yeah. And Craig is on Instagram. You can hit him up at Craig Ross Official. Any final words of wisdom or
advice? I mean, to just do what you like. Do what you like to do.
Good advice. Hey, hang on. Yeah. I'll wrap up with you. Let me say goodbye to everybody. And thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
By the way, man, we have a great fucking name. You know,
this, right?
We do. I love my name. And I, you know, I'm so happy I'm called Craig and not like, there's not a lot of people that are Craig, but I like my name. A lot of things I don't like about myself, but my name is not one of them. So thank you. Yeah. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social network channels. We appreciate your support. Please check out Craig Ross playing with Lenny Kravitz. First of all, man, just go to YouTube and pull up a bunch of Craig Ross videos. Pull up at a minimum Craig Ross Norm's guitar. It'll just blow your mind, and then you'll want to play and see more stuff. Of course, check out Lenny Kravitz's catalog, and you hear Craig all over. He's done a ton of writing as well, and follow him on Instagram at Craig Ross Official. Make sure you go to everyoneloversguitar.com, sign up to get on our newsletter list, and most important, don't forget that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. Craig, thank you for everything.
Cool, man. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.